When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is a Four Center podcast feed, and I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And we are here to discuss breaking news from a long time ago. That's right. It's our Star Wars news show. And man, we've got some fun things to get to. As always, we kind of picked and chose what we wanted to talk about today because there's a lot of stories out there, rumors of titles, great covers. We'll mention all of that in our news discussion shortly here. But before we get to all that, we want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4Center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we'll have a 4Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. But Joseph, Jennifer, we're here. We're here to talk Star Wars, here to celebrate the Star Wars, here to talk Star Wars news. But the real world can sometimes bum us all out here. So the last few days, how are you all doing? Where does Star Wars find you and what's going on? Jennifer?
Well, Star Wars has found me, all right. I feel like I'm getting my dissertation. I'm going back, you know, I've talked about finishing Rebels. I've watched The Bad Batch, revisited some Clone Wars arcs and episodes, and then I dove into the prequels back to back, which I've never really done before. And this has been a great viewing experience for me because I have it on my computer, Disney Plus, put on my headphones, tune out everyone around me, and I have the captions on because I'm a visual learner, and it's been fantastic. I've really experienced the stories the way that they're meant to be experienced, which is like I'm actually understanding it. Now having watched, you know, Rebels and all these other things, I see how the tapestry is woven together. I'm understanding the Trade Federation. I'm understanding like all these things that I always kind of got hung up on. And then seeing it back to back and seeing these characters evolve, their performances evolve, it was beautiful. I was really upset by the Revenge of the Sith. I was like emotionally distraught. And then for whatever reason, I'm like, I'm going to skip Solo and I'm going to go into Rogue One. And again, I was like, okay, I got to stop. I got to take a break. It's a lot.
You need to watch some Ewoks cartoons to just get you a little bit of a burst of Star Wars joy.
Something, because it is devastating to see the fall of Anakin and his relationship with Obi-Wan and how that changes from a father figure. Their Jedi are so hard on him. I'm really upset. I mean, I knew this, but I was getting angry. And I'm like, this child has been through trauma. You don't like criticize him and you don't treat him so harshly. He needs like love. He needs understanding. And the Jedi don't give him that. And I'm like, no wonder he ends up like this. Very upset.
It's so great. It's so great to hear you feel the power of the prequels when you really invest in Anakin, right?
Yes. Yes.
That's a 20 plus year sigh right there.
Oh, yeah. So that was my weekend.
That's a great weekend.
That's a good one indeed. That's a good one indeed. Joseph, you and I had fun Friday on the live YouTube show, and you and I had, you know, just personally, professionally, always always moving, always grooving, as is Jennifer. We had a tough week, but we celebrated a good, fun live Force Center event. Thank you all to all those that were watching. How did it finish up for you after there? Did the good vibes continue?
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of great vibes from Star Wars. Yeah, life stuff, big picture of the world, lots of not great stuff, lots of upsetting stuff, lots of hope within it, which I think, you know, Star Wars is so great at reminding you of, like, okay, when things look really bad, that's when you need hope more than anything. Not just like everything will work out so I don't have to pay attention to it, but hope that if I think, I work, collaborate with others, that I can help make a difference. That's what's so valuable to me about Star Wars. So life stuff, definitely difficult, big world in some juggling some personal stuff. But this was just such an embarrassment of riches of Star Wars adventures this week. We did that great live show, which was really fun on YouTube. It's George Lucas's birthday. Today is the actual anniversary of Attack of the Clones release.
Wow, that's right.
And I watched the first half hour of the film this morning because I wanted to like watch it at midnight to recreate 20 years ago, but I was too sleepy. Just really enjoying that film, and like you, Jennifer, just like, oh man, every line has meaning, and really investing in Anakin's perspective makes those films so rich. So that was great. I've been reading. I power read Brotherhood, the new Obi-Wan and Anakin book. All weekend, so it's just kind of been like all Star Wars all the time, but the one specific adventure that I wanted to talk about, I mentioned this on the live show, so apologies for people who watch our live show, I'm repeating myself a little bit, but my wife got some tickets to a production of King Lear. We haven't been to live theater in a long time, even that's a big part of me and my wife's past and history and how we met each other even. So it was a production with the great actor Joe Morton, and I thought, oh, that's great. He's perfect for King Lear. He's been building his whole career to play King Lear. Sure, let's go to that. That'll be fun. And then I see a little bit lower on the cast list, Emily Swallow. Oh, the armorer. Yeah, from The Mandalorian. I definitely want to see this. So I had been to this theater before, the Wallace Annenberg in Beverly Hills, and it is a traditional kind of proscenium stage where the audience is in the audience, and then the actors are up there on stage, and you watch them from afar. Well, for this production, they wanted to turn it into a theater in the round, so they put risers on the actual stage, and we didn't ask for it, but we were just assigned our tickets when we arrived, and they were in the front row of the seats on stage, so we were like, on top of the actors, no exaggeration. There's this great tension because the actors would run and I had to keep my legs tucked or I would trip and hurt the actors like that close. So it was a really, really great experience because of that. The whole production was great, but to bring it back to Star Wars, it was so great to see Emily Swallow give this amazing performance. No mask. She didn't wear her armor helmet. She broke the Mandalorian code for this production of King Lear. Just a phenomenal powerhouse of an actor. Just the presence, the choices, amazing choices to make the Shakespearean dialogue clear and direct. And then, you know, her voice only occasionally dipped into this place that it sounded like the armor when the character was really angry and threatening and quietly threatening the character in King Lear. And it made me really appreciate how much she made a choice about what that voice is for the armor. So it, phenomenal experience. And it made me wonder and hope that there'd be some convolution of plot where we get to see the armor with the helmet off.
Yeah.
Love it.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe removed by Bo-Katan.
I was going to ask, like, do you, you know, intentionally, unintentionally, accidentally? That'd be interesting.
I don't think that character would ever take her helmet off. So that's what I meant to, like, I kind of think, you know, everybody's like, is Bo-Katan going to fight Din for the Darksaber? I think somewhere in there, the armorer is going to go, yeah, you know, I'll take that. Yeah. So that made me think, is that the final defeat of the armorer, that Bo-Katan takes her helmet off and looks her in the eyes?
Yeah. Amazing. And I said on the live show, I'll say it again here too. Joe Morton, always been one of my favorites, in large part, yes, because of Terminator 2 and Speed, right? He was in Speed. He had a good run there in that mid-90s. I've always thought he'd be a great Star Wars actor. Just yeah. As the gravitas that we would want.
Yeah, gravitas and great sense of humor as well. Just, yeah, phenomenal. So those are all my Star Wars adventures. Whew.
That's great.
It's good. That's good. Yeah. And for me too. Yeah. Yeah. It was just a lot of fun Friday again. You don't have to run out like our personal struggles and everything, but yeah, I crash landed into that live stream. And Joseph, I know you've kind of not necessarily in the plane with me, but already on the runway with your crash plane. And it was just so fun to have Force Center friends come on out and hang out with us, ask fun questions, great questions. And that was a lot of fun. And yeah, the stuff going on this week, I was particularly affected by the shooting, what I call domestic terror attack in Buffalo. And mm-hmm. That one just really got me. And it was George Lucas's birthday, and it just got me reflecting on what he decided to put into the world all those years ago. Mm-hmm. And the communication on fear, and you and I, Joseph, just that deep dive into the Yoda force lessons in Clone Wars, and mm-hmm. how that one just explicitly states fear is evil. Fear is evil. That is what we're fighting in this galaxy, and how it manifests in different ways. And how George, we sometimes might make fun of, poke fun. I should say not make fun, but poke fun at it's for 12-year-olds. It's this morality tale. But that is and will always be his legacy, to put this into the world of we can constantly make better choices, and true happiness comes from helping others. True happiness comes from connection. We're all connected, and we must combat fear. And fear, again, manifests in so many ways. So I was just, you talked about hope, Joseph, and you got to find hope, and hope emerges during dark times, and it's not easy, and we don't want to just be like, you know, clown music playing going all is well. You got to face the real things. And oddly enough, it just as I was down, I'm happy that we here at Force Center love exploring the themes that are present in Star Wars, because they are simple, direct, and purposeful, and it is about hope over fear. So I took solace in that, took solace in our Force Center community that allows us to continue to explore those themes every week. So thank y'all. I need it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think that has been just such one of the great things of doing this podcast and having this community, is really being able to look at these deep ideas. And it's easy to kind of write off some of the talk of the fear that's so explicit, you know, not only in the original trilogy, but really in the prequel, and go like, yeah, I know fear. It's like when you don't like snakes or you don't want to go on a roller coaster. I get it. I should be brave. Like, yeah. that's a kind of fear. But, when you really embrace, this is the kind of fear of something bad is going to happen in the future. But it's not really a fear of something that isn't real, like being replaced. The fear that motivates these horrible things in the real world. That's the kind of fear that Star Wars is talking about.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. The fear to change, the fear to grow, the fear to lose power. It's all those kind of things. And I love, we always say we're not necessarily reviewers here. We discuss Star Wars. We love studying Star Wars. We're students of Star Wars. And I really love that choice, even though, hey, sometimes I know maybe we folks want us to dive into different points or what we don't like or things like that. I just, as time moves on, I'm happy to be here discussing the positive things that this series teaches us and has for us to learn. So we'll keep doing that. We'll keep doing that, you know?
We will.
All right. On that note, let's just do this. Let's get into some Star Wars news, because we've got this little show called Obi-Wan Kenobi on the way here. Starting to cause, I will admit, starting to cause me a little bit of stress on the night it drops. Right? And we're all down there. And I'm like, what should I bring? An HDMI cable to go to the hotel TV? Should I bring my extra computer monitor? do I plug that in the laptop? And then I a lot of tweets going around about, what do you do about the hotel Wi-Fi? Everyone's going to be on. And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, my aunt lives around the corner. Maybe I can go there. But my aunt doesn't have internet because she lives in the 80s. So, oh, no. So
I'm picturing just like a team of hackers, like crawling up telephone poles to like try to get, you know, the best access to the Wi-Fi.
But you know what? That is fear. And I got to let go of that fear and know that we're all having a good time. But let's get to this big story, because I bring this all up because the Kenobi promotional ship has left the space station, as we know. And Ewan McGregor spoke to Empire magazine about many, many Kenobi related things. And we will say this, when the press tour started, was it over in Berlin? And gosh, Moses Ingram looks so great right next to Hayden and Ewan. It was this band. Everyone was like, name this band. And it was just so awesome to see those three featured, and a lot of cool things came out of that. But I think this Empire magazine article had some deeper things to dive into. A big talking point around all the promotional shows has been the love for the prequels, particularly episode 3. McGregor told the tale in Empire magazine of introducing Revenge of the Sith as part of a marathon in Hollywood, and that being his first real experience with Star Wars fans that appreciate these films, saying in the story he felt the warmth and positive reaction. That's pretty specific, because we know all those down here, El Capitan will do it, the Marvel films, Star Wars films, they'll do the big marathons. I haven't attended. I remember our pal Mike Black goes, he's like, yeah, you just sleep there in the chair, you go for a while. So it was just fun to hear that that was part of Ewan's journey back to Star Wars. So I want to ask, what is our reaction to just kind of reading and hearing that story, Joseph?
Yeah, I mean, I love the detail in the way that he tells the story, that he picked Revenge of the Sith because he always thought that was the strongest, that he rode his motorcycle into Hollywood at 2 a.m. I've watched a bunch of the Long Way specials that he does with his friend Charlie Borman. And so I've spent a little bit of time with Ewan McGregor as Mr. Motorcycle.
Yeah.
So that's just like kind of like a great picture of him being like, yeah, you know, what the hell? I'll jump on my bike and ride in and say, hi, I'm Obi-Wan Kenobi. But I think it's one thing for him to talk in these general terms that he is in this press tour, which are so great, about, hey, it's great to feel the love from this generation. But put yourself in Ewan McGregor's shoes and imagine having kind of lived with this reality of, this was a really challenging shoot for me because all the green screen, the blue screen, I didn't really like that, but I did my best. It was challenging. And the conclusion on these movies are, critics didn't like them and people my age despise these movies, right? Mm-hmm. And just living with that as your reality. And then walking into that environment in El Capitan where it's hardcore fans in sleeping bags who have none of that baggage, in these movies are precious, and Ewan McGregor is a golden god. That's, you know, as the meme says from Ewan McGregor, that's effing Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? And to imagine walking onto that stage with that baggage of, yeah, I guess I'll give it a try, but people mostly don't like these movies. And then feeling that explosion of joy and applause at 2 a.m. in the morning, right? Like, we should all be blessed to have a large audience of people help heal one of our open wounds. Because that, to me, that's what that story is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm trying to picture him riding back to wherever he was going to at like 3 a.m. on a motorcycle, hair in the wind, maybe even taking his helmet off. We don't recommend that for safety reasons, but hair in the wind, just going, wow, I got a pep in my step. I'm chuffed. That felt different. That felt different. And one of the reasons is, you know, actors and producers, writers, that, you know, you'll make a bad movie, or you make a movie that doesn't go over well with an audience or the critics, or bombs at the box office, and you can maybe leave that behind. Star Wars is never going away. So those films, the saga, everything, it's always going to be there. Whenever, every time you step outside the door, the prequels are going to be with you if you're Ewan McGregor. So I think that was an added just kind of, wow, that felt good. That felt good. So yeah, Jen, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me, especially watching it this past weekend. And at the time when I saw it, I always thought that Ewan McGregor gave a fantastic performance. He was one of the bright spots of the prequels for me, even way back when. Yeah. So it's interesting. And what I liked about him sharing this is that it shows that even if you're an incredibly successful, talented actor, you are not immune to criticism or praise, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of people, especially online, forget that these are real people doing their job, and everyone doing their job wants to feel like they're doing a good job. And I think that a lot of times fans sometimes might, you know, lambast criticism, you suck, whatever, forgetting that there is a human being who goes and gets in costume and you know, memorizes their lines and finds their marks and does a lot of research and painstaking time to get their character right. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was a very almost vulnerable thing that he shared, that he, you know, he enjoyed it. He enjoyed getting the praise. Oh, you guys like me. That feels good. I really like that he shared that. I thought that was really, really nice and almost like humble. Which is very refreshing in this industry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, indeed. And a lot of people playing that clip of Hayden being asked kind of a similar question on an internet interview on YouTube, and him kind of having that almost choked up kind of like, yeah, I can't describe what this is all meant. The patience pays off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The long process of getting this project off the ground was discussed from his constantly being asked about the role. Lucasfilm reaching out to see if his positive reaction to that question in some interviews to the idea of playing Kenobi was real, which it was, and then to the film, and finally to Deborah Chow coming on board and making this a series, this long process of just even that series coming to life. So it was interesting, especially because I feel as though we've all kind of been along on that journey covering Star Wars the last few years. So anything you want to pull out from this conversation, Jennifer, of now we're finally here, but looking back on the long road to get there.
Oh my gosh. I remember us talking about this on Force Center. I think we were at Joseph's place, and we were just speculating, what would this movie be like hanging out in the desert with Obi-Wan Kenobi? And now here we are. And I think that this long process, it's about timing. Talk about perfect timing. Everything lined up so well with the Mandoverse, the technology that Jon Favreau and his team developed, and ILM, obviously. And then now having Disney Plus, just how people want to watch limited series now and more so than movies. Like, this pandemic obviously forced everyone at home. So it's all these things that came together to create this perfect little space for Kenobi to thrive. It's fascinating. And now look, I know you guys were always excited, but I'm really excited. And I wasn't so much so in the beginning. I was like, all right, we'll see.
Yeah. No, what you're speaking about there is this idea of even the Star Wars theme of, the journey you want to be on is kind of already begun, whether you knew it or not. It was already going on, and how everything has lined up. And I can't imagine it being any other way. I wanted it that movie. I can't imagine it being a movie right now. I want to spend 6 hours or more with Kenobi and the characters we're about to meet and re-meet. That is true. Just like, here it is. It's kind of fun to look back now and be like, we're finally here. The technology didn't even exist, or was in the, the design phase when all these rumors started, but here we are. And I do remember that interview. I was just looking back at it, Force Center, doing some of the tech work I'm having to do here to complete our transition. And Joseph, I hit that one that was like your birthday, when we celebrated your birthday and the Kenobi announcement on the same day.
Wow.
Yeah, it was the article that Stephen Daldry, right? It was a trades article saying he'd been attached. And that was great to hear in this, the confirmation of like, he was briefly attached, but then he had another thing. And like, I always remember that story because the article was, the news drop was, Stephen Daldry has been attached to a Kenobi project. But like, the headlines were like, Kenobi movie officially a go. And it's always like, that's why I always want to focus on, what is the actual news? And what does it mean? It means right now, this director is attached. It doesn't mean the movie is a go, as we saw. It meant that years later, there'd be a television show that Stephen Daldry is not involved in. The whole journey is great. I love that story of, I couldn't go anywhere without being asked this. I couldn't get groceries without being asked, are you going to play Kenobi again? I love that Lucasfilm's like, you mean it?
Yeah.
You're like, It's so great. It's so down to earth for such a big project. The other detail that I thought was really interesting in this interview is this quote where Ewan McGregor says, Then Deborah Chow became the director, and she took the project in two different directions because it became a series, and then the storyline shifted. And that, for me, seems like, I'm not going to say confirmation, it seems like evidence that, yep, when it became a television series, there was some restructuring, maybe some different elements, but that there had been that reporting, just reporting, no confirmation, that there was a shift to within Lucasfilm to say, hey, look, if we want to really explore Obi-Wan being broken, Obi-Wan's journey back to hope, what is the conflict? What is the fear he has to face? Confronting fear is the destiny of a Jedi, he must confront Vader. And why hold back from that? Why not take the big swing? That it seems like that conversation was real, right? In that Deborah Chow and team made that decision to not be afraid of Vader.
Yeah. To confront their own fear of the story. Great stuff. Yeah. Wonderful takes on both of you on the journey. It is just kind of fun. It's a crazy demarcation of time. When you look, I think it was 2017. We were talking about this Kenobi news and it's crazy. It's crazy to think, but finally here. And I just feel, you're right, Justin, too. It was just like a rumor, news story it's at that time. So-and-so is attached at this time. The project is in development at this time. We always joke, until it's on StarWars.com, or quite frankly, until it's in front of your eyes. I don't believe it. And so here we are. It's been fun as a Star Wars fan. It's one of this story to finally see it coming to fruition here. So McGregor admits to not being the deep dive Star Wars expert, but says Deborah Chow is saying, I don't know what happens in episode 29 of The Clone Wars. She does. Now, we talk often here about how the story is more important than little canon details. We do love and respect and want the correct canon details, but we want the character stuff. We want the story. We want the themes. And so what excites us about Chow and others making the show being clued into the emotional canon of the life and times of Obi-Wan Kenobi? Joseph, I'm going to have to ask you last because I want to get your big take on that here. Jennifer, what do you think about this?
I want to hear what Joseph has to say. No,
I mean, sometimes you got to have the cleanup hitter come in.
So, I mean, especially after watching all of the things that I've been watching and really back to back and seeing how they all connect, obviously it is important to have somebody who is not necessarily an expert, but who understands the canon, who understands the lore. And Deborah Chow is steering that story, I have no doubt, in a great direction that will be consistent with where we see Obi-Wan Kenobi in A New Hope. That's also consistent with his character in the prequels. That's also consistent with his character in Rebels and the Clone Wars. I mean, there's a lot, right? So you need to have somebody who understands that. But what I like is I think that they're going to be a great pair, because Ewan McGregor is Obi-Wan Kenobi. He just is. He brought young Obi-Wan Kenobi to life. And, you know, one of the criticisms of the prequels, as we all know, was kind of sometimes the stilted dialogue. But one thing I will say about Ewan McGregor is that he never gave a stilted performance. Every single line he delivers has intention, it has motivation, it has depth, it has meaning. And so you have a fantastic writer, fantastic director, and Ewan McGregor, it's going to be fantastic in my mind. So, Joseph?
I think that was great. We could leave it there. Absolutely. I so love everything you're saying, Jennifer, about what Ewan McGregor brings, what he created. Like, Lucas put it on the page and Lucas knew what he wanted as a director, but Ewan McGregor clearly did so much work to find that character and be influenced by Alec Guinness as well, but find that mix of starting off impetuous and brash and then becoming the master and kind of responding to Anakin and becoming a little bit more stern, but then still within it, having this sort of playful sense of curiosity and humor, and all of that tracks through Ewan McGregor's performance. Just this morning when I was rewatching the opening of Attack of the Clones, I was really watching Ewan in some scenes, or Obi-Wan, where I don't necessarily like the first moment where Anakin just steps all over himself when he sees Padme. It's like, you've become grown more beautiful. And just watch Obi-Wan's face, and he's just got the most subtle, oh my bleeping God, I can't believe you just did that. Like, the performance is always there. He's always in the moment. He's an actor who cares and he's always thinking about it. So yeah, he brings so much. And that's what excites me about this is, from what Ewan McGregor has said in interviews, I think he's really being supportive of this way of telling stories. He keeps saying in interviews, like, it's all connected, the animated shows and the video games, which means like somebody sat down. He's like, okay, Ewan, these guys you're fighting, you gotta play Fallen Order. Yeah, or you gotta watch these clips. Like, there, but what I love is there's this respect for it of like, this is a different kind of storytelling where it's this tapestry over all of these different mediums. So to see McGregor himself have this deep respect for it and say, I don't need to know all of the details because people will help me with that. What I need is to have respect that this is a part of the tapestry, not dismissive of those little things, those video games and animated series are over there. Now I'm doing my thing. But to have that respect for the tapestry. And the other thing that I really love about this is this idea that it isn't about trivia. When he says, I don't know what happens in episode 29 of the Clone Wars, she does. To me, that isn't about trivia of like needing to know the name of Tech or some, you know, background character. He doesn't need to know that was Hermione Bagwell, you know, is the other waitress in Dexter's Diner. To me, it's bringing some of those lived truths of Kenobi's life that he might want to incorporate in his performance. The fact that he was tempted to leave the Jedi Order by Satine and lost her, you know, the Clone Wars really plays with how much Obi-Wan was aware of Padme's presence in Anakin's life. And that's got to weigh on him, right? It's in the movies too, but the Clone Wars goes a little bit deeper of like, Obi-Wan is entirely aware that something's going on, but he's putting those blinders on and not letting himself see how far it has gone, right?
Yes. Yeah.
That's information like that, that your great turn of phrase, Ken, emotional canon, is vital, you know?
Yeah.
Knowing that that Obi-Wan chose to lie to Anakin to fake his own death when he knows how much that would hurt Anakin, you know?
Yeah.
All that stuff is emotional canon that might inform scenes. And then final thing for me on this is Ewan McGregor keeps mentioning playing a scene across from Hayden like no time has passed. And that seems to me utterly describing a flashback, a dream, a holo recording of their time together as Jedi. And I'm really curious if there's some context from the Clone Wars that really informs whatever that scene is. Again, not trivia, but emotional canon.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And all I really can add to that is it is that map of where he is in his life at this time. Not necessarily what he was doing and how he was doing and what he was wearing, but what he was feeling and the why behind it. And it just makes me excited. And I wouldn't expect anything less from anyone creating Star Wars. That's why you have a Filoni to balance out a Favreau. And this is a joke a little bit, but Favreau would be like, I don't know, I want Kenobi to do this because I remember his action figure, which for Favreau is way more deeper than that. But you know, it'd be like, with Kenobi, I think there's so much weight to what is going on with this character because so many different generations have different viewpoints and interactions with Kenobi as a character. Old wizard, the warrior, friend, brother, father figure, all those kind of things. So I want to be able to track that on a map, and they're going to do that.
Yeah, and that rebel scene is so important. I think it's not like Obi-Wan isn't sort of centered and at peace and in the mentor role in A New Hope, but that scene in Rebels is Kenobi specifically speaking about his own journey and reflecting on it, you know, about coming to peace. So I imagine somebody saying like, Ewan, that's where we're shooting for. That's where you need to end up.
All right. Now, one of the key quotes from McGregor about Kenobi's state of mind was, I don't know, delicious, if I may say so myself. He said this: we get to see Obi-Wan without his power. He's out of the game. He's totally rusty at the beginning, and he has to make the decision of whether he's going to try and get back to where he was or not. I love that. We've seen and heard some of those conversations and talking points about where Kenobi was. We have our daydreams about what we kind of want Kenobi to be dealing with here. Looks like the show's going to scratch that big itch for me there. But Jennifer, what are your thoughts on Kenobi's big decision and this thought of, do I even want to get back to where I was? Where I was. The article has a spelling error in it. That, by the way, too. Jennifer, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think about Obi-Wan telling Anakin, I have failed you. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, when that moment is just devastating because he failed him as a brother, as a parental figure. So I can see why he would be hesitant to get back out there because he doesn't want to feel again. He doesn't want to, he just, it's safer to be in hiding. What's interesting also is that Obi-Wan's journey is kind of mimicking Ewan McGregor's journey back to this character.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure he was probably a little rusty with fight sequences, if there are any, which I think that there are. You know, he's not practicing his Obi-Wan Kenobi voice like we are every day, right? You know, he's got to find the character. And so it's interesting. I think that that might have helped him in his portrayal of the character.
I think that's a great observation of just like, talking about that journey of Ewan is right at the perfect moment in his lifetime and career to play this character and answer these big questions there. I love this and I love that idea. And again, it's tracking where, I mean, when we might know where the character is going to go and where the character is going to end up, but I want to analyze and see and live with him making those big decisions, Joseph.
Yeah, no, I love him saying this. Without his power, right, out of the game, totally rusty at the beginning. You know, I love the idea that he's literally rusty at fighting force use because he's been avoiding them. He has not been doing them. And I kind of like this about Kenobi's character always is, like, in The Phantom Menace, he's anxious to be, a Jedi Knight and to take down Maul and all that. But after that, he's really just like, I just want to do my job. And if I got to run around and fly, fine. You know, his attitude of Anakin, you know, always on the move, telling his droid, you know, nothing too fancy. That there's room for like depth of, do I want to re-embrace this power and what it means? And also that, like, in the Clone Wars, during the Clone Wars, he gets up to this like fighting peak because he has to. And then he hasn't been doing it for 10 years. And he's like, oh, this stuff again. There's like room for, like, honestly, middle-aged comedy, right? Of like, I have to get back to this. I don't want anything like super wacky or anything like that. Sure. But that reality of like, I got to get back into fighting shape to face this challenge is really fascinating. Yeah. For the whole kind of rusty fighting stuff, I'm really interested in that. And then he has, Ewan McGregor talked about, he has to make a choice, right? And I think that's really going to be the inciting incident somewhere in these first two episodes. And what I'm most excited about there is exactly how that choice, that inciting incident is pitched, right? Is it that someone is in trouble and he just can't resist, like it's implied by the Grand Inquisitor? Or is it just he does a small act and it spirals out of control and he doesn't realize what he's starting, you know? And how aware, it sounds like it's not a proactive choice where he decides, I have to confront Vader. It sounds like he starts on a path that brings him eventually to Vader. And I'm so curious in the inciting incident when he makes the choice to take action, how aware is he that it's going to bring him to Vader eventually, that's inevitable? Or is that kind of a part of the journey where, like, he does what he thinks is a little thing to help someone, and then kind of about halfway through, he realizes this is going to force me to confront Anakin. This is going to force me to confront that I didn't save Anakin and I didn't end Vader, and now what am I going to do?
Yeah, there's something really exciting about that, especially going back to our early discussions and daydreams, like I said earlier, about what we might want. Yeah, it leads to Vader, the line from Return of the Jedi, but Obi-Wan once thought as you did, all those kind of things. But it seems like, again, we're just speculating based on themes and what we want, what we love. Not straight out predicting here, but there, Joseph, you're kind of discussing this additional beat of, he doesn't go, all right, grab a saber, I'm going to go get Vader. He does, maybe he could. We'll see when the show comes up. But this idea of
millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You might be done with the Force, but the Force ain't done with you. And someone needs help. And that, I don't know, I even kind of say he's got the mission of Luke. That doesn't go away. Clearly he's invested in that. But it's kind of like, I'm just sitting here at the bar. I don't know, just waiting. I want to train him. Owen doesn't want me to. I got to deal with that. Now something bigger emerges and who you are. You can't escape it right now. And that creates Reva yelling, you know, you can't win, you can't escape. And her involvement in the story, it's got me excited for what you're talking about here, this potential of, well, yeah, I've tried to avoid it, but I am on a path to Vader.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's really exciting to me to see, just like I said, exactly how it's pitched. If he is aware of the magnitude of the choice he's making, or if it's a moment of temptation that he gives into to play hero in it. Spirals out of control from his point of view. It's real hero's journey, you know, refusing the call and then accepting the call kind of stuff that I think is going to be going on.
Right. Ooh, love that. So love that. Any final things from this wonderful Empire magazine interview here? And again, there's so many out there. Oh, I almost get confused. Did I read that here? Was that in Simple Weekly? Where did I read it? But this is a big one. Any other final thoughts, Jennifer, from this interview?
Yeah, I just love both he and Hayden, like you mentioned, have both been very genuine, very honest, very heartfelt about returning to their characters, returning to the franchise. And I really like that. I mean, these, you know, Ewan McGregor has a fantastic career and he's still saying, yeah, I'm excited. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me. I also think it shows like respect for fans, respect for the material and the creators that they're working with. And I find that really nice because we don't often see that with a lot of very successful actors. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Joseph?
Yeah. There are a lot of great little things in this interview. Ewan McGregor said this a couple times about the first time Vader is on set and everybody applauding. He keeps saying it was the first time that Vader comes down the street.
Oh, that got me. I was spiraling.
I don't think that's a turn of phrase. I think there's some street set and that's just the fun. We're talking about some deep things. This is just like the real fun detail of like, what street on Tatooine, Dayu, Coruscant, a planet we haven't met yet. Like it just, it sounds like some pop song of like, what street's Vader walking down? Like I just, I'm so excited to see that moment, that image. I also like that he notes I was a producer on it. I was loosely involved in notes and different drafts and story ideas and such. And that was very satisfying. Yeah. It's really humble, but it also shows an actor who's like really, really invested in it, I think wants to help tell the best story and find the truth of the character and all that. Final thing for me, that this article includes the first image of Ewan with the lightsaber, right? That of Obi-Wan with the lightsaber, and then it's cropped out of any sort of background. So like I don't know if it's a promo photo. Yeah. I don't know if it's a promo photo or if it is that they have cut out the back because they don't want to spoil it. But that that took my breath away this morning to see the first live image, not promotional image with art, but live image of this Obi-Wan with that saber in hand.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It reminded me of like those old New Hope kind of promotional photos, even of the one of like Luke in like a black shirt and tan pants or whatever that shot was. It has that vibe, but you're right. It might've been something else. Yeah. Love all that stuff. Great stuff. And look, I want to be clear too. It's like this, the press leading up to this, the focus is a lot on Ewan McGregor. It's Obi-Wan Kenobi after all, the return of Hayden, what that means. I think they both deserve that spotlight right now, but I got to tell you, I think once the series gets rolling and the series is over, we're going to be going back and we're going to want to hear all of Moses Ingram's thoughts about Reva and this character and what she's bringing to this series. I think just the fact that she's out there front and center means a lot about what this character is going to represent in the story, that it's more than just someone with a red saber coming down the pike to chase out Kenobi. I think I get where we are with the marketing right now because of these two coming back. But I can't wait to just learn more about this character and revisit Moses Ingram's, thoughts and the process that she brought to this character here.
Absolutely. It's so great that she is on the press tour and being, you know, centered as a new voice in Star Wars and a new character. And it does continue to give me hope that this character is really going to have an arc.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Story here that, I got to say, normally I don't react to these kind of stories. I just see them and they're fun and that's it. And that's also okay. You can just stop it. It's fun. But the production on Ahsoka has begun. And on May 9th, Lucasfilm sent out a photo with a cowboy hat on a director's chair with the Ahsoka logo on it, meaning production on Ahsoka has begun. Again, while that's not giant news, it's important news for Star Wars. A character once lambasted by the established fan base at the time on an animated show has grown to become a live action character leading her own show with an entire generation of fans rooting for her. I want to discuss what that means to Star Wars overall and to us who were in a weird part when the Clone Wars show came out. We're part of the original trilogy generation that wasn't quite sure, but I don't know. It was a weird relationship that for us grew over time to a character and show we love. But what does that mean overall to Star Wars? Joseph, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think for me, it just this actual journey with Ahsoka and her reception by the fandom reinforces a couple of great Star Wars lessons, hope and change and patience for that matter. Hope to me that like, yes, even when people are kind of set in their ways and make certain assumptions and this is what Star Wars is and Anakin can't have had a Padawan and this is just cutesy kids humor. What is this doing here? To have some hope that maybe it will turn out different, change that the point of the character is starting really young so we can go on this whole journey with her. You know, that's about embracing change and also about embracing patience, right? And I think that's a really important lesson. I think even in watching Ahsoka, it's been years and years to watch her grow up on the Clone Wars and then in Rebels and now in this. But even just having patience for one story. I saw a friend get upset on social media about the movie The Batman. And I don't want to speak about any spoilers, but this person was like, I watched the first 10 minutes and I stopped because I don't want to see this movie that's all about X. And my friend might watch the entire movie and not like it, and that's fine. But the entire movie is the journey that Batman learns, you know what? I don't like X. And I think we need to really have patience as audience members for where the story begins is where it begins. And sometimes it begins in a place that it's maybe not perfect because the point is growth. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even saying that Ahsoka didn't begin perfect. I think she actually did begin perfect because she began young mm-hmm. and then she changed. And that's the power of it. So patience, patience, patience. Mm. Mm.
Big old Force Center Will said there on that one there. We have to make a stamp sound. Boom. Well said. Well said. Jennifer, your thoughts on this. And here you are taking a dive into Rebels a couple years after. It is, I think Joseph's right, patience for in a lot of ways factors into this stuff here.
Yeah, and when I first saw Ahsoka, and I loved her, I didn't understand the criticism or the dislike of her because for me, I loved her kind of spunky attitude. I actually was thrilled that she was kind of this like orangey brownish color. I saw myself in her. And that to me was so thrilling. And I finally felt like this new era of Star Wars. I thought this is going to be really good. And then seeing the character grow, seeing Ashley Eckstein take her platform and really create this community and create her universe around that is, you know, giving female Star Wars fans clothes, which, I mean, gosh, for years I would, you know, shop at Hot Topic buying men's clothes. So it was really a wonderful, wonderful thing to see this character evolve. And then, of course, now with Rebels and with the new live action show, I love it. And my daughter loves her now too, and sees this powerful female character and what that represents, which is quite frankly like the norm nowadays for young kids. So, I love Ahsoka. I love Ahsoka so much. And I love the community that's formed around her.
Oh, you Force Center. Well said for you too, Jennifer. For me, as someone who I always say that she grew from, you know, the little Snips character to, for me, for a while, to like the top five favorite Star Wars character. I hate ranking because why cut anyone out of a great list? But she grew. But so I didn't start from a really horrible, demonstrative, what the hell is this? But I had a little bit of the, what the hell is this vibe? And it's been a long play lesson for me of perspectives, generations, Star Wars going on. And I think just it almost like Ahsoka herself, and all credit to Ashley Eckstein, Ahsoka just kind of won me over like she did a lot of people in the show, including Anakin. Like, I kind of think I started like Anakin. So to be where we are now, also her coming back in Rebels, which was powerful and important, and just to see it grow. And you're right, her universe, the community around this character, it's been a valuable lesson. And then this reminds me, it almost moved me of just like, here's where we are. This series will probably come out in 2023. Here's where we are. Star Wars is not dead. Star Wars is still going. Star Wars is still offering up a lot of things. And we're now in a spot where Star Wars is saying, hey, patience, time, growth. You're right, Joseph. All those things that Star Wars is about is also about, it should be about us as fans and letting the series tell its story and get to where it wants to go, get to where it needs to go. It was just, I just love seeing that. Love seeing the photo, you know, love a good cowboy hat, sure. But just love what that means, where we're at with Ahsoka on the way.
Yeah.
So, cool stuff there. But it also makes me think of, you know, we know a lot of the rumors. We know a lot of the cast. But at this point, this is like a temperature check. We're going to come back to this time and time again. But any wild expectations, predictions floating around our Ahsoka loving hearts right at this moment, Joseph.
Yeah, I mean, I think, especially when we're talking about the whole journey of Ahsoka, right, that one of the powers of it is we really get to walk through the Jedi experience with her and see all the different things that she does, see the compassion, see the good intent of the Jedi, see the moments where they slip, see the moments for herself where she's like, I'm getting a little too aggressive, but I also really believe in helping people and being assertive and not kind of running away from things. So that all makes me really interested to see a show that focuses on what does she think the Jedi should be now? Like, obviously she's got, she seems aware and proud that Luke is starting a school, but is that for her? Like, good, he's got that.
Right.
I'll take care of my other thing. So I'm really excited about that. Wild predictions, I think, since the Hayden's involved, I think I have a lot of hopes for her learning to commune with Anakin's spirit and having some deeply moving, healing scenes. And I do think she is heading to Mortis eventually, but I don't know about this first season. I think with how much Filoni has had this wonderful relationship with the fans of thinking, well, this has got to be the end of Ahsoka, right? Well, this has got to be the end of Ahsoka, right? That I don't think it's one season. I think she's heading to Mortis eventually, but perhaps in a multi-season journey.
Yeah, love that idea. Yeah, Mortis, yeah, it just, not only does Dave love to play around with the fate of Ahsoka, he loves, I think he loves that world between worlds and even just the design, the aesthetic of that world and Mortis and all that stuff. So I think he's going to want to play with that. Yeah, as far as wild predictions, the more I think about Hayden involved, the more I think flashbacks or just bits of the story, their relationship that we haven't seen, little shadows that we can play with, you know, where we can go in and have an entire scene on something that was, you know, that we didn't have time to or didn't get to in other parts of the storytelling. That's just, that's my wild thought of beyond just the Force Ghost stuff, which I think is very realistic of a possibility as well. But you know what I mean? Just like Ahsoka and Anakin at the height of their relationship with a little magic going back in time and kind of seeing that. At least that's what I want.
So, I think that seems likely. As well.
Yeah.
That does.
Jen, wild thoughts, wild predictions. Oh,
I got some wild. No, I don't have so many wild ones. I kind of feel like I'm in the world between worlds. I'm hearing voices and I'm like, who has officially been cast? Who is rumored to be cast? We know that Natasha Lou Bordizzo has been cast as Sabine Wren. Has Ezra been cast? I know that they've been talking about Mina Masood has been cast as Ezra, but not really officially confirming it. Then Dave Filoni kind of threw me. I had forgotten about this, that supposedly her appearance in The Mandalorian happens before the Rebels appearance.
Yeah, he plays coy with that for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, so is she searching for Thrawn? Is she searching for Ezra? Are Hera and her son Jason going to make an appearance? Like this, there's just so much. Morai, like, where are we going with this? I want it to get trippy. That's all I know. I want it to, you know, I really want, like you're saying, the Mortis and stuff like that. I want it to get a little weird. I'm okay to that.
Yeah. I kind of agree on that. Kind of think it's gonna, let's, you want to get nuts? Let's get nuts.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think Ahsoka and her brilliant white blades are gonna get wild.
Gonna get wild. Yeah. And looking at the official IMDb cast, which is, you know, obviously just so far incomplete. Yeah. Nothing on Ezra now. I think that's just strong rumors and all that kind of stuff. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Ray Stevenson also in the cast as well. Ivana Sokno as well. So, we'll update y'all when that stuff happens there. All right. Ahsoka has started, but we are going to take a break. Before we do, we are going to recommend an audiobook for you. What do we got today, Joseph?
We have the book we were mentioned at the top of the show, Star Wars Brotherhood by Mike Chen. It is an adventure of Anakin and Obi-Wan just as the Clone Wars begin. We're going to be discussing it soon, so we recommend checking it out.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun so far. Download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, we're going to take a quick break. On the side, more news and a look back in this week in Star Wars history. Stick around for more Force Center.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Force Center, my friends. We are digging into Star Wars news. And like I said at the start of the news segment here, there's a lot of shows, news out there that we could have talked about here on the show. The Fallen Order sequel might have a rumored title. We'll get that when it's official. We'll get that great cover of the Han and Leia romance novel, if you will, coming out. A lot of cool things out there. But this one, I just wanted to include because it kept popping up. And then even in the live stream, we got some questions about it we didn't get to right away. Saw Molly Damon tweeting this out. We got to talk about the cult of Rebo, the cult of Max Rebo. And StarWars.com ran this story that a lot of buzz this week around the exclusive Max Rebo Red Ball Jet concept maquette replica coming to Star Wars Celebration. It's from Regal Robot and it will launch their archive collection. In fact, even today at the time of the recording, I'm sure by the time this episode hits the public, we'll have more from this collection revealed. There was something this morning, but this particular one of Max Rebo, the Red Ball Jet concept, is based on Phil Tippett's original work. And the piece highlights the answer to that age-old question about Max's feet, but also answers the question about his back end. It's there. So, Joseph, Jennifer, thoughts on Max in all his glory? Joseph.
Oh, I love this. I love this idea of instead of making replicas of completed things that we know from the final film, this idea of making them out of concepts, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, this made my opinion about Max Rebo's limbs snap into clarity. There's been a lot of discussion about it. I think that this proves that concept Max only had legs, and they're jointed where legs go off his hips. They bend, they play weird, beautiful. Thumbs up.
Yeah,
I think the Max Rebo that made it to the film, he has limbs attached at the shoulder, and we've never in live action seen Max outside of his organ. Mm-hmm. So I think the legs are a mystery. The action figure had legs, but that's just an action figure. I think at this point, since we haven't seen his lower body outside of the organ, he has Schrodinger's legs. As far as I'm concerned, we don't know. The legs are a mystery.
I really agree with that. I don't think I'm joking about this answers the age-old question. I think it still goes on. Jen, you're an expert of Jabba's palace. From the moments we've first started working with you, I met you. We know that you love Jabba and his menagerie and all the inhabitants of his palace. Your thoughts on the cult of Rebo and this piece of work here.
I agree with what Joseph said. First, I'll tackle this. I was a little bit troubled when I saw. I love the idea that they're replicating, you know, concept art or props or whatever. Okay, but I don't. To me, it feels very like 1970s. Like you'd see, I'd go to the craft fair and I'd see like little statues of you know little gnomes peeing or like. Like stuff like that. That's kind of what this reminds me of. Stuff that's kind of like hippie-ish, which I like that. I like that that's in Star Wars history, right?
Yeah.
But, and I'm looking at a photo of him right now from the, the Book of Boba Fett. Yes, from the Book of Boba Fett. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's not using his legs to play on the keyboard or the organ. He's using his arms. We don't know what his legs look like. I don't think that that's the finished product. I will argue anyone. I need to go on some show and I'll argue it because we see where his limbs are connected, which is like right by his neck. There's no way.
Right. Yes. If those aren't arms and instead they are legs, then words have no meaning when discussing Star Wars anatomy, right? You know what? It's on top of Luke Skywalker's neck, his tail. Sure. Why not? Like, those are arms. That's where arms go.
Very much arms. Very much. Yes. But I have no doubt that that is what his backside looks like. You know, I think the backside is accurate.
Accurate.
Yes.
I absolutely love your description of the vibe. I was trying to put my finger on it, and you're so right. It is like a weird kind of slightly drippy gnome sculpture from the late
70s. Yeah.
Sorry, I've just seen so many. I remember being a kid and walking around like that was really prevalent in the 80s as well. And I'd be so like disturbed. I'd be like, why are they selling this? And who would have this? I knew people that had it in their homes. These cheeky quote, No pun intended. Cheeky yeah. things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we just need a little like the wart pulling down his diaper so we can see his butt.
Oh, man, this is the conversation I wanted today about Max Rebo. Yeah, yeah, and I do, yeah, absolutely. I think the mystery continues. I think what we see and I think where it ends up is different from where it started, and it all kind of is part of the legend around him. As far as his design, I almost didn't believe it. The reason I wanted to include the story today is, like, when it first started popping up, I didn't click on any of the links. I was like, who's making this up? Or, and I know it, you know, it probably had to do with the original design, whatever, but I just almost didn't want to face what I was watching there. But then I clicked on it, and it's just fascinating. And as someone who's been watching the Kids in the Hall reboot this weekend, it's very much reminds me of a Kevin MacDonald sketch that's going on right now about him wanting to have a hot bath. It's a very, very similar vibe. But just love it. But I love that Rebo here in 2022 has got just this, I don't even call it a resurgence. I just think Star Wars is like, yeah, we know y'all love this guy, so we're going to bring him back. Here he is in Book of Boba Fett. He is alive, and at least at the start of the series. Where was he now? I just kind of love this kind of stuff around Star Wars. This is why we're here, the deep stuff, but also the silly. So, you know, what do we think? Why do we love everyone's favorite Ortolan band leader? What's the appeal of Max, Jennifer?
I grew up playing the piano many, many hours a day. So I loved that there was a keyboardist in Star Wars. That won my heart over. But also he's just chill. You know, there's like chaos around him. People are dying and he's just playing some tunes. And he's this big blue elephant, basically. And I don't even know what he would be, what I thought of him as a kid. But I loved him. I loved his vibe.
Yeah, something about the eyes, the ears, everything about it. Hit it, Max, indeed. Joseph, I know there was, until the Astromech, there was no real drummer in Star Wars people loved growing up. But yeah, what's your thoughts?
Special edition, some Weeke banging on big drums. But yeah, nothing like that great Astromech. No, I think Max Rebo, he's got this vibe that he's in his lane taking care of his thing, right? That he seems like he's really into the music. I love that they kind of made it clear and made it a part of his character, what we observed in Return of the Jedi, that he knows when to stop playing for violence and conflict, and he knows when to hit it again. He's just totally like, I am a master of this particular, my lane about playing music in dangerous places. And then it just kind of adds to the character, the idea of like, he knows when to get out too, because clearly he survived the sail barge and he wasn't there when the sanctuary blew. That adds to his character. And I think final thing for me, he utterly fits in Star Wars while also being kind of unique in his look. He kind of looks like they asked Charles Schulz to design a character. Yeah. He looks like, you know, if Snoopy was imagining Star Wars, Max Rebo is who Snoopy would think of.
Yes.
Naturally.
Yes.
No, naturally. Yeah, absolutely. And I as far as the Sanctuary Book of Boba Fett, I don't think he had anything to do with anything. I think he just knew it was time to go because Max has those instincts. Yeah, I love it. I mean, to him coming back, it's one of those things, you know, of the nostalgia debate and characters coming back. And is it too much? I just think he's a spice in the stew here, and it was just so much fun, and I think probably newer generations discovered him again for the first time beyond just our generation celebrating him coming back. So I actually hope we see more of him, and if you're at Star Wars Celebration, I will absolutely be wearing my Hit It Max Brian Ward designed Max Rebo shirt. I'm going to be showing that one off there. So now, as far as picking up the Regal Robot Archive Collection Red Ball Jet figure, I'm going to skip this one. I'm going to skip this one. I don't know. Jennifer, though, I think it might, you know, your peeing gnome collection. Maybe this will fit in nicely with it.
I like they just released, what is it? It's this Kowakian monkey lizard. It's three different Quacky monkey lizards. I think doing the See No Evil, Hear No Evil thing.
Right? Oh, wow.
Yeah, they just came out with that one today. So that will also be there. That's more on my radar.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. A lot of pieces going to be in this archive collection. I'm going to definitely check those out. Joseph, I don't think until you unpack the Razor Crest, I don't think you can get Max Rebo. That's,
no, that's if I bought Max Rebo, this is not the kind of thing that I do. But what I want to do is I have a fantasy of buying him and then sneaking him into like a very proper art museum and just putting him up like he's one of the displays and see if anybody takes him down.
Let's go on a mission to the Getty and just put it somewhere in there. That'd be great.
Oh, it's like opposite of Ocean's 11. You're adding things.
Adding things to it. Oh, that'd be great. So that is a look at Star Wars news, at least for now. Before we get out of here, we'd like to take a look ahead to Star Wars Past. And yes, at the time of this recording, it's the 20th anniversary of Attack of the Clones. This episode will release the day after, but I was looking ahead to May 19th, 1999, and we all know what happened. Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, was released in theaters. It would go on to gross $922 million worldwide. So now, Jennifer, Joseph and I recently shared our memories of seeing this film for the first time, including, I think, down to even the snacks we bought. We told the personal tale. But we want to talk to you. Do you recall that day for you? The good, the bad, the long-lasting memories, feelings going in, feelings coming out, and did you have popcorn or chocolate?
Oh, I had Raisinets. That was my candy of choice back then. And I think that I had bought some action figures prior to the release. And then I saw the film, and I liked it at the time, but I remember it being very different than what I had expected. Very, very different. And I thought, okay, all right. This is a new era of Star Wars. So, but I think I saw it more than once. So yeah, that was my memory. And I believe I saw it in Orange County at the Irvine Spectrum. I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
Yeah. Did you wait? Parents buy tickets where I can't, you know, high school friends, junior high, I can't remember exactly your experience if you shared before. Were you one of those midnight waiters?
I was not a midnight waiter. No, I was not. I just bought tickets. I think we waited in line and that was exciting, right? Okay. To wait in line with other Star Wars fans. But yeah, you know, it's funny. I actually don't remember that experience that well. I remember the Attack of the Clones experience, which is when I saw it at Grauman's Chinese Theater in LA. Mm. Yeah, yeah, nice. That was a whole other experience. But for some reason, I don't know why, I don't remember. Maybe it's because it was Orange County. I blocked out a lot of Orange County memories. No, but yeah, it was exciting, but it was not as, I you know, on the news, they show all around Los Angeles and crazy fans dressed up and whatever. That was not so much Orange County. It was a little bit tamer. Maybe I was a little bit disappointed by that.
Mm.
Yeah,
absolutely. I get it. So for Joseph and I as well, and you, Jennifer, if we could step through the world between worlds with Filoni and his cowboy hat and travel back to that day and tell ourselves one thing as we went into the theater on May 19th, 1999, whether it be midnight, 10 a.m. for me, wherever Jennifer saw, what would we say to ourselves? What's the one thing, Jennifer, you might want to know going in?
Clear your mind and embrace the new. I really wish, you know, someday you're going to love this movie. Your kids are going to love it. You're going to understand why this movie is so different than what you are thinking it's going to be. If I'd only told myself then, I would have enjoyed it a lot more. But I'm a creature of habit. I like things the way that I like them. I eat the same thing every single day for lunch. I always have. So I think it was hard for me to embrace the new. But now as a grown up, that's what I would say to myself.
That's fair. That's kind of what I might say to myself. A little bit of release expectations. I also would say it's Wizard. Just trust me. You'll eventually get there. And something, I don't know how I'd phrase it to myself. I'm cheating here on my own question of asking one thing, saying one thing. I don't know how to say it, of just like what is there for you to see is not the end of the journey. It's also what it's telling you. It took me a long time, clearly, to get to that point. And I wish I had that going in. But Wizard might be it there. Joseph, what would you tell yourself?
I think Wizard might be the best answer.
Wizard.
But I also cheated and thought of two things because I was really thinking what would actually be most helpful to me. And one is very similar to both of you, Jennifer. You said it really well. But I think I would whisper to myself, this is what George Lucas always intended, and it's meant to be different. Like those two ideas, because I think so much of my baggage, the baggage of many of my friends in the generation I grew up in, was we wanted it to be like the way it was, and we felt such ownership. Mm-hmm. The idea of like George Lucas always meant it to be this political. He always wanted it to be a story about how, you know, an individual and a group fall. It's meant to be different. It's meant to feel different. So embrace it. That would be great. The other thing that I might whisper to myself is just Shmi's wisdom is the key.
Mm. Yes.
Because I think I just let a lot of what she said just kind of whistle past me as like, those are platitudes. I'm familiar with them. And not seeing the weight of them, how important they are to Anakin's journey, and what great advice they are in real life. Almost right. Every line she says is some bit of like wisdom that's key.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be it. Pay attention to Shmi.
Her wisdom is wizard.
It is. It is. Great stuff. Well, looking back, hard to believe. 20 years of Attack of the Clones and Phantom Menace all those years ago. But here we are, and now Kenobi's on the way. Time flies, and it could be a good thing if you embrace it. All right, we are out of here today. Been a lot of fun discussing the news. If you want to find us or ask a question and get involved, here's some ways to do it. You can follow us on Twitter, Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcast is available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Actually saw this come up in the Force Center Discord. Some people asking if we have merch. I would tune me out at the end of episodes as well, but just to highlight again, we do have merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Some of our designs, as Brian Ward will tell you with his, they get pulled down because of their Star Wars connection, but we have some designs up there right now. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. From there, you can get into that Discord server ask us questions, deeper long-form questions, and just support us there. You can follow me at KedNapsuck. Go to my website, KedNapsuck.com. Still got a big comedy show coming up on June 4th at the Troubadour in Los Angeles. If you're local and you want to get tickets, go to that website. A lot of places to look if you want to, if you're affected by the terror attack in Buffalo. There's a lot of GoFundMes out there. We always want to preach caution of where you want to put it there. But I am looking at some websites that have a great collection of places. There's if you just type in Buffalo shooting support, you can find GoFundMes and organizations. Just encouraging everyone to do that and find the one that might suit to you and where you trust, where you want to support. That's always a big thing during these times as well. Jennifer, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Jennifer Landa and TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138. And today I am going to be spotlighting the Baby to Baby organization. There's currently a nationwide baby formula shortage across the U.S. This is a serious, serious emergency. My first baby was actually, I gave her only formula. My second baby, I breastfed. So, you know, this happens, and I cannot imagine not having access to formula. So Baby to Baby is actually working directly with their wholesale partners to have formula made for a fraction of the retail cost. And their goal is to raise $1 million to deliver formula to families living in poverty so their babies don't go hungry. You can find out more info and donate at babytobaby.org.
That's wonderful. Great stuff. Great stuff. Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me Instagram, Twitter, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for everything else. I would like to continue to highlight Vote Forward. Their website is votefwd.org. As I've said before, I don't think voting is the one and only thing that we can do to make a difference, but I think it is an extremely big thing, and crucially, it's within our power, and that's what this is. You write to people and encourage them to use their power to vote. A lot of elections coming up locally, as well as big midterms coming up. And I think it's really important to focus on those as well, because I think it makes such a big difference on issues, all sorts of issues across the board. So vote forward, votefwd.org.
Absolutely. Great stuff, my friends. All right. That is it for this week. So for Max Rebo and a bunch of peen gnomes, we'll see you next time here on Force Center.